Welcome into hour number two on this edition of Hagman Report. We got a great guest coming up, Peter Chowka. He is the journalist and author. He writes for American Thinker as well as his own website. And for Hagman Report, his piece on 9/11 this week was picked up by Michael Savage on Michael's new website, michaelsavage.com. And there might be a few other pieces that Savage picked up. I know Peter has written quite a few in the last few days, and those are on HagmanReport.com. Just a few headlines before we get to Peter. There was an attempted or a terrorist attack in France today. A man shouting Allah Akbar attacked police officers in, I want to say this right, Toulouse, France. And this is the latest in a series of just ongoing terror attacks that we've seen coming out of Europe. Man shouting Allah Akbar attacked 7 people, including 3 police officers in France. A former psychiatric patient viciously punched 4 passerbys in the French city. The enraged man, 42, began beating shoppers at around 4 p.m. Police, who were only meters away, swooped in and arrested the furious man as he was, screaming, "God is great" in Islam. And, you know, at the same time, I read this story where we have this leader in the UK. I got to get her name. She is saying, a British MP, country would be better if whites learned from Muslims. Conservative MP Anne Sobury said the UK would be a better place if those pesky white people would just learn more from Muslims. And this is in a country where you see constant attacks from terror attacks from Muslims on citizens. And they continue to shield these terrorists and, you know, basically blame the victims in these terror attacks and in society, as Europe, as everybody will tell you, has just become a cesspool of illegal migration, illegal immigration, and terrorism. And it's continuing to get worse and worse and worse. I don't know, John. What do you think? The Islamic invasion. Here you have another terror attack. Then you have the British MP Anna Sorbury telling white people in the UK that they would be better if they could just learn more from Muslims.
Oh, this is clearly, there's only one way to define this, and it goes back to a conversation I was privileged to have with a Hagman Report regular guest John McTiernan back in May, and he and I discussed this. How can there be such delusion over people who have been to higher education, people who have made a lot of money in the private sector, people who have made big names for themselves either in media or the fake stream news, etc. How can there be such delusion where we can go on YouTube and we can see the optics of homosexuals being thrown off 10-story buildings in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, or Tehran, Iran, and yet the LGBTQP34Z consortium in this country, it wants to embrace Islam and has all their little chants about how Islam is welcome here. How can this be happening? And the only way that you can cinch this all up, the only way that it makes sense, is that Satan is a liar, a cheat, a counterfeiter, a thief, and a murderer. And I personally feel that Islam is Satan's greatest masterpiece. And what we're seeing in the headlines and every single news cycle is delusion that is satanic in nature from the father of chaos and lies.
Absolutely. This is a story that's being underreported in the news. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. Democratic Seattle Mayor Ed Murray resigning Tuesday after more allegations of child sexual abuse surfaced. He had victims and abusers coming forward before he was elected, after the election, and after he was in office. And I think there was 4 or 5 people that came forward separately. And after the 5th or 6th one, he finally resigned. There's a great article on Daily Wire, multiple Democrats currently involved in child sex scandals. And it goes on to talk about a pattern, a disturbing pattern of Democratic politicians involved in crimes and allegations of child sexual abuse, largely ignored by the media. They start off with the Seattle Mayor Ed Murray as the first one. They go on to Anthony Weiner, get into Jacob Schwartz, who was 29. He was an assistant for Mayor de Blasio. He was arrested on child pornography charges in May. Democratic New Jersey Senator Robert Mendez, currently on trial facing federal corruption charges, which started in 2012 over allegations he and another man were having sex with underage prostitutes. And then the Daily Wire goes on to start a list of other Democrats who have been recently involved in child prostitution trafficking and sexual abuse. And then they even go on to talk about Jeffrey Epstein and others. So, very important story there. We have with us our two guests, Peter Chowka. Peter, it's great to have you back on. You've been doing a lot of great reporting. Where do you want to start tonight?
Well, thank you, Joe, and thank you, John. It's great to be with you. Let me just start with this little factoid, which came up a couple of hours ago. I was watching Fox News, and they presented the results of two brand new public opinion polls on the subject of single health care. And I know there was an article at the Hagman Report today on, I believe, Bernie Sanders and a number of Democrats going on the record saying we have to have single-payer health care in this country.
Yeah, Hillary said that today in an interview.
Yeah, they're all falling in line. Apparently, all of the major potential presidential candidates on the Democratic side for 2020 are coming in line to support single-payer socialized communist medicine, which is what it really is. I mean, single-payer sounds good, but it's really the hammer and the sickle in the medical waiting room. But anyway, there are two new polls out today, or that were cited today by Fox. One, the Pew poll, claimed that 60% of Americans believe it's the government, the federal government's responsibility to provide health care. And going along with that, a brand new Quinnipiac poll found when asking Americans, do you support single payer, 51% said yes, and 38% said no. So we see the balance shifting. I mean, for decades in this country, Americans opposed socialized medicine and anything coming close to single payer. But now that the Democrats are riding it hard and giving it new friendly sounding names like single payer or Medicare for all, and they have a warm and fuzzy avuncular character like Bernie Sanders pitching it, and all the others like Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton now, etc. You know, God help us if we get a Democrat majority in Congress next year and a Democrat in the White House elected in 2020, we are in for it. Because as I've said before, single-payer socialized medicine is going to be one of the last nails in the coffin of our freedom overall, and certainly our medical freedom in this country, or what's left of it.
Absolutely. You know, folks, our very special guest this hour is Peter Barry Chowka, and we love Peter. He's such a prolific writer. We found his work a long time ago at American Thinker. Special shout out to Thomas Lifson over at American Thinker, who introduced us to Peter. And Peter has been writing for Hagman Report as well. But, you know, Peter, I just wanted to quote Mark Twain as I listened to you speak, particularly with this Pew poll. Mark Twain once famously said, there are lies, damned lies, and statistics.
There's another great quote along those lines. Figures don't lie, but liars can figure.
So, well, what I'm figuring at this time, as I listen to you kind of go down this coterie of the Bernie Sanders and the Kamala Harrises, if you will, Peter, doesn't the DNC basically need some new players at this point? I mean, consider this: they have almost no national voices who are not under some suspicion, or should be under indictment, or have significant evidence that's piled up around their political careers. The corruption is so rampant in the DNC. It's almost like the party itself has become so infested that rather than call pest control, maybe they need to just burn down the house and start fresh.
Well, actually, they do. They have a lot of old horses there, and Bernie Sanders would be the leading one, of course, although I've seen other public opinion polls which claim that Bernie Sanders is supposedly the highest rated, the most popular politician in the United States right now, which probably isn't saying a whole lot. But the Democrats are putting out there, or ready to put out there, a new generation of candidates. And the one that worries me the most is Kamala Harris in California. She's a brand new senator from California, and she is a radical. Plus, she's presenting herself much like Barack Hussein Obama did, claiming to be biracial, African-American, attractive, obviously intelligent, accomplished woman. It's interesting, though, she claims to be African-American when her mother is from India, the subcontinent of India in Asia, South Asia. And her father, she claims, is African-American, but he's actually from Jamaica. So really, if she wants to be accurate, you think she would say she's half Jamaican-American and half Indian-American. But, of course, African-American sounds and sells better. But she's a radical, and she's taking a big page out of Obama's playbook. I mean, he came out of nowhere, too. And as a first-term senator, the rest is history. Another one they've got in waiting there is Cory Booker, the fully African-American senator from New Jersey. They're the Castro brothers from Texas. One of them served in, I believe, Obama's cabinet. The other one is mayor of some city in Texas, and they're ready to roll. And, of course, they've got the Latino American angle there. And then also in New York State, Kirsten Gillibrand, the Caucasian senator from New York, who took over the seat vacated by Hillary Clinton. And Kirsten, there's a lot of buzz about her. In fact, I saw an article last week, I believe in Politico, which claimed that the dream ticket for the Democrats in 2020 would be Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket and Kirsten Gillibrand as vice presidential candidate. So, again, any of these names just chill my blood.
Kamala Harris is, I'd say, a more, you know, she's a, was she Hispanic, I believe, senator?
No, she's Kamala Harris is half Indian, you know, from her mother from India, and half, she claims, African-American, but really Jamaican-American.
Okay.
And, you know, what I mean, again, you know, but again, you look at the Democrats, and virtually all of their leading spokespeople and candidates, or potential candidates, with the exception of Hillary and Bernie, are hyphenated Americans, you know, identity, practitioners of identity politics, appealing to a constituency that will go for them because of their racial or biracial or ethnic or religious background or whatever. And, I mean, haven't we had enough of that? I mean, really, can't we just get down to we're Americans and run on that without, you know, appealing to this constituency that is going to, you know, push them over the top as they did for Barack Hussein Obama in 2008, let's face it.
And let me ask you about this real quick, Peter, because a lot of people question the legitimacy of Obama due to the natural born citizen clause in the Constitution. And if I remember right, Kamala Harris, her both of her parents, neither of them were U.S. citizens.
She was born here, though, I believe. She was born in the United States. And actually, she comes from a high-class background. I believe both of her parents, I think they're divorced, but they're both professional people. I think her father is a physician, and her mother might have been, too. But she's from a well-to-do background, and more power to her. I'm glad that her immigrant parents came here and did well and thrive, but you know, look at the track she's on now. I guess she sees which side the bread is buttered on, and she's going for it.
Well, you know, Peter, if folks care to, I'm taking a look right now at harris.senate.gov, and she is a very electable public persona. Reading through her bio quickly, tireless prosecutor. She's got all the bona fides to perhaps, as you said, really be some potential poison here in 2020. But you know what troubles me is a comment you made, and I want to extrapolate this for a moment, get our listeners and viewers thinking about this as well. Hyphenated Americans. Think there's so much power in marrying those two words together. Hyphenated Americans. And Peter, consider the damage, that in some cases the irreparable damage being done to our country by what exists in that hyphen.
Absolutely. I alluded to that in the piece I did on Monday, September 11th, exclusively for the Hagman Report, on a reflection on the 9/11 attacks 16 years later. And first, of course, I acknowledged our debt to the heroes and the heroic acts that people did that day and the days after, and also our sadness because of the victims, the almost 3,000 victims of that unprecedented terrorist attack. But then I also mentioned that a thought that comes to my mind when I think of 9/11, and like most Americans who were alive that day and of a certain age following the news obsessively that day and the days and weeks and months afterwards as we came to grips with 9/11, and I thought that as I reflect on it now, I thought on that day, 9/11/01, I would have never thought in a million years the way I was feeling that day and the way America was feeling that day, united in our anger, our frustration, and our dedication to make the bastards pay for what they did, as I put it in my article. I would have never thought that 6 years later, 7 years later, we would be getting ready to anoint and to allow to accede to power a man named Barack Hussein Obama. And this is politically incorrect to say this, but I will anyway. When I first, not when I first heard that man's name, but when I got in touch with who he really was, as I was able to do several years before he ran for president, when I started investigating him, I thought, his name says it all, Barack Hussein Obama. He lived up to that name. He lived up to his background. He lived up to his inbred anti-Americanism, his hyphenated Americanism, his identity politics, and look at the 8 years he gave us. In 8 years, I think he, more than any person in American history, certainly any president in American history, brought us right to the brink of the complete disaster, the abyss that we are staring into right now, thanks to Barack Hussein Obama. I was thinking the other day, you know, like the two of you, and you especially, John, I think, are students of the history of Nazi Germany. How did that ever happen? How did that abomination of history, how was that allowed to happen in an advanced country like Germany, allowing Hitler to be elected, and within 7 years, Hitler, having served 7 years in power as Chancellor and then Führer, brought that country into World War II. Unbelievable, the short amount of time. And I thought, that was done in about 7 years, or actually even less than that. Barack Hussein Obama had 8 years to do his dirty business. And it actually even started before January 20th, 2009, when Hussein Obama came to power. It really started on Election Day 2006. And that's when the Republicans and President Bush had been so destroyed by the media and the Democrats that the Democrats took over control of the Congress in 2006. And, of course, they came to power in the Congress in 2007. So they had at least a two-year head start on the rise of Barack Hussein Obama. So that's 10 years right there that I see them in power, really. And you could also say that they're still in power today. Although we elected Donald Trump, and he's been in office for 7.5 months now, we see every day, those of us who pay close attention, to the power and the control of the shadow government and the deep state on our lives. And Donald Trump may be the 45th president of the United States, but it certainly doesn't look like it in terms of the reality that we see every day in the statist control over our lives and in the insanity that has now come to the fore in this country. So You know, I should make it clear, I'm no fan of the Republican Party. I'm not a registered Republican. I'm an independent. I hold no brief for the Republicans, especially the current state of the Republican Party. But really, Donald Trump is our last hope, and the Republicans who comprise the Freedom Caucus and perhaps who we might be able to elect next year in 2018 is really our last hope. And if we get another Democrat, socialist, communist administration in there, a bifurcated, hyphenated American identity politics administration that's going to shove socialized communist medicine down our throat, I really don't see any hope if that happens. That's going to be the end of the line, in my opinion.
I would tend to agree with you, Peter, with that opinion. You know, when we consider this hyphenated America, I love words, and Peter, I know you love words too. And we consider where we are today as a country. We are a tale of two countries, of two ideologies, of two worldviews that have no common denominators whatsoever. Even if you look for the lowest common denominators, they simply don't exist. We have one half of the country that believes that abortion is okay. The other half of the country, it emphatically believes that life begins at conception and that we are under a biblical mandate to defend the defenseless. Now, I consider that kind of the baseline of the tug of war. One half of the country thinks that, well, really only the military or police should have guns. If there were no guns, there would be no crime. And see, to me, Peter, that's got the logic of a four-year-old behind it. The other half of us say, no, I have my guns so that I am never placed against my will in a situation like what we've seen in the last 3 years in Venezuela. So this hyphenated America thing, Peter, it's what our 45th president, Donald Trump, is dealing with today. And I know this is a big question, and I'm going to punch out and give you plenty of time to answer it. But Peter, in your opinion, is President Trump aware of hyphenated America? And if so, is his administration dealing with it to bring cohesion, to bring America back to America?
Well, it's an excellent question, John. As usual, you guys ask excellent questions that are difficult to answer. And I would say I think the jury is still out. You know, I paid very close attention to your guest last night, Daniel Horowitz. I believe it wasn't it Daniel Horowitz who was sketching out the reality of what he sees from his close-on perspective is going on with President Trump and his administration right now? And he was painting a rather realistic but ultimately discouraging and pessimistic picture of what's going on. And they also paid close attention to the several interviews, long-form interviews that have aired so far with Steve Bannon on 60 Minutes on Sunday night, and then the last two nights, Monday and Tuesday, on Charlie Rose's PBS show. And the value there, at least, I mean, I'm no fan of Charlie Rose, of course, or PBS, but the advantage there, at least, is that the program gave Steve Bannon, the former top advisor to President Trump, who left the White House a week or two ago, it gave Bannon the opportunity to really lay out how he sees things, his philosophy, and now as the executive in charge of Breitbart.com, again, where he sees things going. And of course, I thought it's too bad that he's no longer a member of the Trump inner circle, because I found Bannon's commentary and conclusions and analysis of how and why they won the election last year, and how he's actually very optimistic. He actually said that Steve Bannon expects that the Republicans, and that is conservative Republicans, will win more Senate seats next year in 2018. They're not going to lose. They're going to win more. He's confident they might even pick up some more seats in the House of Representatives as well. And listening to him, it almost made you a believer again that he must have had a significant influence, certainly on the last months and days of the Trump campaign, to help to push it over the top there. But, you know, I thought if the people of intelligence and patriotism and goodwill and energy like Steve Bannon can continue to come together and do what we have to do, then there is hope. You know, which brings me around to another issue I'd like to comment on briefly, because it's so easy to be depressed and flailing at this time when we see what's going on. I mean, like you guys, I look at the news every day from a very obsessive, close-on perspective with my 45 years of experience as a journalist, and I can't believe what I'm seeing every day. I mean, one story after another absolutely blows my mind. I mean, in years past, if one of these stories had emerged on a given day, I would have thought, wow, isn't that amazing? Now there's literally dozens of them. You can't even keep track of them all. The crazy news that's coming out, the complete corruption of the news media, the propaganda matrix that we are drowning in, the control of Hollywood and popular culture by satanic influences that have given us, as Michael Savage calls it, the sewer pipe from Hollywood. You know, I could go on, the corruption of academia, of public schooling, I mean, you name it. And then the stories that emerge every day. But the hope is, and I still have this hope, that we don't know where it's going to go. We don't know yet why Donald Trump won the election last year. I mean, we can listen to Steve Bannon and his analysis, and it sounds pretty good.
We can listen to Hillary Clinton and her analysis, too.
Oh boy, and let me
really
tell you,
when you listen to her audiobook excerpts that are playing, isn't that torture? That's worse than being waterboarded.
Peter, I've got to tell you, today on the Hagman Daily Show, and Joe and I have been having so much fun doing that show, by the way, and thank you again for joining us a couple of weeks ago, and we'll have you back soon. But today on the Hagman Daily Show, I don't know what came over Joe. But
I referred to the Clinton book three separate times. I was just getting some of the excerpts. I was reading some of the more outrageous excerpts that other people were pointing out. There was one about how she was approached after the election by, you know, over 20 different females who apologized to her for not voting for her, and Hillary said she couldn't offer him absolution. I mean, just ridiculous things like that. And right now, even I'm reading her interview from The View today, where it's just as bad as her book. I mean, this lady is, she's delusional. Or she's just been lied to by so many people around her for so often that she's become delusional. I believe it's
both. She's been delusional for a long time. I mean, she's a delusional Saul Alinskyite from her college days. You know, imagine waking up every day of your life since you were a teenager or a young woman, in her case, and dreaming about and plotting and planning for one thing and one thing only, that someday you would be elected president of the United States. That's what motivated her and her husband their entire adult lives. Actually, Bill Clinton has said that he got the bug and the dream when he was 16 and he shook hands with JFK in the Rose Garden, that he decided on that day that he was going to be president someday. I mean, this is a serious pathology that is afflicting these people. And then you layer onto it whatever else is going on with them. Either they're, I mean, there's credible reports that Hillary Clinton is a satanic follower. I mean, I know a friend of mine is the brother of the New Age Wiccan priestess who conducted the seances for Hillary Clinton when she was in the White House so she could channel the spirit of Eleanor Roosevelt and all this stuff. This has been well documented in Carl Bernstein's biography of Hillary Clinton and other sources. I mean, this woman is a wacko, and she's dangerous. And thank God that she's probably not going to get close to power. But, you know, there's a whole slew of people like her standing in line there. But just to briefly finish the thought I had before I forget it, which I could easily do at this point, I was leading up to this thought in a roundabout way. Nobody really knows why Donald Trump won. The polls suggested he was going to lose. The only people that I knew who had the mainstream voice were the political insiders at Fox News, Pat Caddell, Doug Schoen, and John Labutile. who did a weekly show on Sunday on Fox for about 4 or 5 years, and then right after the election, they disappeared, never heard from again. They were predicting for years in advance of Donald Trump that somebody would come along who would harness the kind of energy and momentum that Trump wound up doing. They didn't name him per se, but when he emerged, they said, watch out for this guy. He could take it all away, and he did. And I think, you know, we'll never really know or understand fully how things like social media, the alternative media, podcasts or shows like the very one we're doing right now, you know, more notable ones like Alex Jones, the talk radio conservatives like Michael Savage, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Fox News, how all of these things came together to really give the voice and the direction to what turned out to be a majority of Americans, at least in terms of the Electoral College vote, who made it possible for Donald Trump to win the election. So, you know, that gives us hope as we feel organically and intuitively that what we are doing here, you, me, and others like us in the alternative media, working pretty much almost 24/7 now out of this desperate need to keep on with it because the chips are down. The revolution is here. This is it. We either win or we lose for all time. So we're in the struggle right now, and that's what keeps us going.
Amen.
Obviously.
Amen.
So, you know, if this continues to grow and spread virally, there's no telling what might happen. And Steve Bannon and what he said on Charlie Rose, God bless him, might be 100% right. I certainly hope he is. I'm really counting on it.
Well, you know, Peter, a thought occurs to me. So we know that election numbers were skewed to one degree or another on both sides of the aisle. Nonetheless, at this point, the mainstream narrative is that 62 million Americans voted for 45th President Donald J. Trump. Now, whether that was 62 million or 59.8 million or 63 million, the reality is he flipped five crucial states, states that have not voted Republican in 30 years, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. I mean, he got it done. My question for you, Peter, and I mean this question very sincerely, do the 62 million people who put President Donald Trump in the White House know what they want?
Well, I think another good question. I would start by saying I think they know what they don't want. I think what united a lot of the electorate and probably a vast majority of Trump voters last year was we look around and we see an America that we don't recognize anymore, especially those of us of an age that were old enough to remember an America of even a decade ago or any time before that. I mean, my memory goes way back. You two guys have a more recent memory, but you're old enough in your mid-30s, Joe, and your mid-40s, John, to remember an America that was 180 degrees different from the country we've got now. And Trump's brilliance in coming up with his slogan, Make America Great Again. I wondered about that when he first started using it, and then I very quickly thought, wasn't that brilliant? Four words that pretty much summarized exactly what he was all about and what we were really deep down all feeling and experiencing, those of us who'd had it up to here with identity politics, political correctness, affirmative action, a corrupt fake news media, and all the other ills that we have seen in recent years, especially during the past 8 years, but even going back further than that, of course. So we start with that we just can't take it anymore, you know, like that old film from 1976, Network, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore.
Yes.
And then we find what unites us. And actually, it could be interesting now. Well, before I forget this point, another thing that Steve Bannon had to say, and by the way, I recommend, I never thought I would recommend that anybody track down a Charlie Rose program online, but Charlie Rose PBSPBS.com puts his programs, his PBS programs, online, and you can stream them and view them at no cost. And I strongly recommend that people look at his programs from Monday and Tuesday of this week. I think Tuesday's just went online today. His interviews with Steve Bannon. The first one on Monday took up the whole show, 55 minutes. Second one last night took up about 35 minutes. And I sat here watching it at the time on television as it aired, and I had rapt attention. It's the first time we've really seen Steve Bannon unleashed or, you know, in his own words, at length, with minimal interruptions. I have to say, at least Charlie gave Steve the opportunity to really say his piece. And, yeah, I appreciate that. It was a good use of public television, finally. You know, of course, what they showed on 60 Minutes in 22 minutes or whatever, really radically cut up, you know, was much less valuable. But, you know, Bannon made the case very, very strongly, enthusiastically, and optimistically that we ain't seen nothing yet. That Americans actually, you know, it's beyond left and right. It's no longer Democrat, Republican. It's, do you see a way clear through to an America that can work again, that can have the industry brought back, that jobs can come back, that we can grow the economy, that famous slogan that I think Bill Clinton first started to use. And then that will make it all so much better. We'll have money again. We'll have tax revenue again. We can lower the tax rate. We can unify the country. I mean, we saw some small examples of what's possible in the recent weather-inspired tragedies in Texas and in Florida, where people came together, with some exceptions when looting occurred. But on the whole, Americans came together, notwithstanding race, background, religion, position in life, to help each other out and to literally save lives. So that was a good example of what's possible and what the American spirit still holds. So if we can just mobilize that, and it's interesting what Donald Trump is doing actually this very night, where he's hosting a dinner for, among other people, Charles Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Now, that might seem on the face of it a little strange and an element of concern, but on the other hand, the Republicans in Congress have so seriously let him down. So he's reaching out to Democrats and to some more moderate Democrats, the few who exist as well, and saying, you know, to paraphrase Rodney King, the late Rodney King, can't we just all agree to get along and maybe work together and see what's possible, you know? And if anybody can maybe pull it off, hopefully it's Donald Trump, maybe adhering or keeping to what we hope are his conservative bedrock principles. We'll see. But, you know, when they put Donald Trump down, his critics, and which includes pretty much everybody in the establishment now, when they put him down for being, God, a Nazi sympathizer, a white nationalist, a racist, an anti-Semite, I think, you know, what a completely inaccurate picture. Here's a guy who triumphed in New York City business and real estate. New York City being one of the most ethnically, religiously, racially diverse cities in the world, certainly in the United States. And if there had ever been any whiff, any hint that this guy harbored a racist or anti-Semitic bone in his body, it would have come out years ago, and it never has. So, you know, there's the absurdity there. But, you know, I still have hope. I mean, he's only 7.5 months into his administration, and when you get right down to it, there's no alternative. Where is the alternative to Donald Trump? We have to continue to hope, to pray for him, to keep his feet to the fire when he does the wrong thing. I've been listening to Dr. Michael Savage again recently, and it was nice, as you mentioned, that he linked to my 9/11 article at the Hagman Report, and he also linked to my Hagman Report article of last week, in which I talked about the study that found that Christianity is an endangered species now. But that was very, very interesting, and he linked directly to both of them. I sent him the articles, and he
and Peter, we want to thank Dr. Savage for that as well. We have tweeted out on our social media feeds and mentioned it both on the Doug Hagman Show as well as Joe and I's effort in the afternoons, the Hagman Daily Show. Dr. Michael Savage, thank you so much, sir, for for fighting this fight with us. Now, Peter, you asked a question.
Can I just finish the thought? I was just going to mention this about what Dr. Savage said. He's been very critical of President Trump in recent days and weeks. And, of course, he was a major Trump supporter and was taking a lot of credit for helping to get Trump elected. And he had a one-on-one meeting, not one-on-one, but he was invited to join a dessert party that President Trump was having at Mar-a-Lago. I forget it was right before, right after the inauguration. And Dr. Savage was very proud of that and the photograph that came out of that. But he mentioned the other day on his show that he probably will never be invited to a similar event like that again because he's become critical of President Trump where criticism is deserved. And Mark Levin, another conservative talk show host, mainstream national talk show host, has been critical of President Trump. So where he deserves criticism, he's going to get it and he should get it. But, you know, we still have to trust that he got there for a reason, for a purpose. And, you know, we wish him well. And again, you know, it's the only option we've got. But
exactly.
Please continue.
Well, it is the only option we've got. And just speaking personally, I pray for President Donald Trump. I'm so grateful that he became president of the United States. Peter, in 45 years of being alive, when I woke up that morning, would it be, I guess, November 9th of last year, and opened up my phone and saw that it was, in fact, President Donald J. Trump, I felt like I was almost floating up out of my bed when I saw that. I was so unbelievably relieved. I called my dad. I said, "Dad, how are you doing?" He said, I can't, you know, my dad's a 65-year-old, very successful businessman. He said, I can't hardly believe what I'm seeing on the networks. I mean, this is, he said, son, this is a miracle. So, Peter, what I'd like to sort of present, you with, you made a comment a moment ago, with regard to the Cajun Navy and to the neighbor helping neighbor optics that we saw all through the Gulf Coast and from Georgia on down to, you know, through Texas and all these devastated hurricane areas. And you said, when we see what the American spirit still holds, and I think that's the key. It's the key is, what is the spirit of this country at this time? Where is the spiritual health? If we were to have a national fitness test, where is our spiritual health at this time? Now, I don't want to be unduly negative, Peter. I personally feel like we would be found wanting in that spiritual test. 2 Chronicles 7:14, folks, take a look, blow the dust off your Bible and take a look at 2 Chronicles 7:14. It's a very good place for this nation to start. Peter, I think so much of what we see from President Trump over the next 3 years is really going to depend on the determination of the 62 million people who put them there, who put him there. It's like, it's almost like we have two different components. We have our leader, but then we have the sum total of all of us. And where we need to, as a country, develop and get it together, and it starts between families, husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, brothers, sisters. We've got to get the American spirit healthier. Peter?
Absolutely. And before I confront your question, your comment with an answer or a comment of my own, you're mentioning your awakening on November 9th and learning the news of Donald Trump's election. He was president-elect. Well, we were watching the coverage live here in the Pacific time zone, and I literally cried when it was announced that he would be the next president. It was a moment I'll never forget. It was the pent-up emotion of the previous 8 years at that point of complete despair that it had led me to.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's hope. There's hope. But, you know, I was reminded in listening to your comments there, John, that I concluded my article on 911 that I wrote for the Hagman Report online on Monday of this week with a quote from the Bible, that the truth shall set you free. And I thought, well, this is a good place that we can start. I mean, I agree with you. If we sat here and deconstructed the state of America, in particular the spiritual health and state of America, it would be a terrible picture. And I think it was validated by the survey which I wrote about 1 week ago and which was in the media last week, that the state of Christianity, of Christian belief and practice in this country, is at what looks like its lowest point in the history of this country. And it's similar, if not worse, in Western Europe, in the countries that gave us Christianity starting in the Middle Ages. So we're at a low ebb, we're at a low point. But on the other hand, we have now the internet, social media, the alternative media. We have what we're doing right now, tons of podcasts and streaming shows out there. We have a number of mainstream sources. You know, we often cite Sean Hannity at Fox News, and there are others at Fox News who continue to do God's work there. And I think Sean Hannity would say that. He's a very seriously believing Christian man and has told me that himself on several occasions. So we're dealing with the truth as we see it, and I think we're on the right track. And what we're doing, not us alone, of course, but literally millions of people who are engaged in this kind of work, even if they're doing it by sharing and retweeting things with their friends and in their circle, or sharing it by word of mouth, we are sharing the truth, which for many of us, the source is, and it's growing larger by the day, our understanding of the Bible, of Christianity, of the work that Jesus did when he was on the planet. And this is the source of our ability to analyze the insanity that we see going on in the reality around us. In my opinion now, if you don't have a spiritual understanding and an underpinning, this reality today is going to confuse you greatly, if not terminally, and make you a susceptible victim to the satanic influences that are out there at every turn. So we like to feel, and I think we are, on the right track here. And so are many other Americans. How many millions, we will never know. And many of them voted for Donald Trump. I mean, I've seen polls that, what is it, like 80% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump, or those who voted for Donald Trump last November. And we have to think that this number of people touched by the truth, which is where we're starting in analyzing the reality, is going to grow. And as we bring in references, and as you do pretty much every night on your show, either with your commentary or with many of your guests who are very aware biblically, obviously, this is just going to really help the country's understanding and its spiritual health in the short and the long term. And again, if it doesn't, well, we've done the best we could, and it's in God's hands. But I have to think that it will, and it's what helps to motivate me every day in this very tiring enterprise that we're all engaged in here. I was thinking earlier how an interesting show sometime might be that we get together, since we know each other so well by now. I think this is the 10th time that I've been on the Hagman Report since June 6th, including the 5th time on video Skype. And each time has been a very high pleasure and a high point in my life. But we could convene sometime and just chew the fat, talk informally about what it's like, a day in the life of Doug, Joe, John, and Peter. Maybe I could help to do the interviewing or the debriefing of what it's like to be a writer in this area. You know, I mean, most of the audience probably doesn't have a clue of what the nuts and bolts are like to right. I think I was doing some rough estimating that since May 19th, having written over 50 articles for American Thinker since then and another 32 or so for the Hagman Report, I think I've authored well over 100,000 words in the last 3.5 months. And that's the equivalent of about 2 books. Michael Savage mentioned that his new book on God comes in at 50,000 words. So, you know, I've written like 2 books worth of material in all these articles. And by the way, I've done it for nothing because American Thinker doesn't pay any of its writers. They make that clear right on their writer's guidelines page. But it's a privilege to write for them because I know that hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have read my thoughts and reporting there. So it's a privilege, just as it's a privilege to come on your program and to contribute to the Hagman Report. You can't put a price on it, what the value is. It's a privilege to give back, to be able to do this.
Well, but, Peter, you know, it's a privilege to have you. And just to let you know, you got kind of your own fan club. We have a number of emailers saying, oh, thank you so much for bringing Peter back on again. We love him. So on top of the section you have on the website where your stories go, you have your own fan club as well.
By the way, there's a new GoFundMe page, but
I think Peter Barry-Chaka may be, in fact, the fifth Beatle. You know, we share that sentiment, Peter, and one of the things I personally appreciate about you so much is how prolific you are. You know, I write articles, nothing like you do. Joe writes articles from time to time as well. We have the access to put them up at Hagman Report every day of the year. Something, to be perfectly honest, Peter, was a dream of mine like 3 years ago, to be able to go into the back end of HagmanReport.com and put up whatever I want to write about. And yet, the sad irony is, I work so many hours a day to produce the show, I write very few articles at this time. You are a writing madman. You're a monster, constantly getting these ideas out, constantly commentating on and analyzing what's fresh in the news cycle. And I am not blowing smoke up your kilt, sir, when I tell you that your work is significant show prep for Joe and I at the Hagman Daily Show, as well as for Doug Hagman on the Doug Hagman Show also. So it's always a pleasure and an honor to bring you in, Peter Barry-Chaka. Now, we've only got a couple minutes left, Peter, and you always take us out with something that's on your heart indicates how you're feeling. I'm going to give it to Joe. I'm not sure exactly how much time we have left. But, Peter, thank you for joining us.
And
let's 3 minutes? So we've got 3 minutes, Peter. We're going to give that to you. Speak from the heart. Tell us how you're feeling, and we just love having you.
Well, John, right back at you with the comments you just made. I mentioned this in an email to Doug yesterday before he left on his trip, because I had the privilege of speaking with him for over an hour off the air yesterday, which is always a really special privilege. And I mentioned that I owe so much to the Hagman Report because I've been a regular listener to the Hagman Report for 4 or 5 years, and of course a reader of the website and of Doug and Joe's material, Doug in particular. And it's become such a part of my life and helped me to grow in my understanding and awareness and ability to actually do the work journalistically and analytically that I'm doing. So, you know, it really works both ways, and it's why it's made this relationship that's evolving here between us and among us so special. But I'll just end with a few thoughts to try to wrap it up with a bow. What we're seeing in the big picture now, and one of your guests the other night, I think it was Sergeant Tom Juby, I believe, commented on, if I'm getting that name right, and
that was a retired RCMP,
right,
Sergeant Tom Juby.
I believe he was the one who mentioned the corruption of the judicial system in North America, Canada, and the United States has been totally compromised. And I thought, you know, that's a really interesting and important point to keep in mind. As we see what's going forward is the politics of personal destruction. Donald Trump, they're attempting to destroy him. they're attempting to destroy people on Fox News. We didn't have a chance to talk about Eric Bolling, formerly of Fox News, who I've been reporting on. And then the day after he was fired from Fox News last Friday, his son, his treasured son, Eric Chase Bolling Jr., came up dead at age 19 at university in Boulder, Colorado. It's a story that I'm continuing to follow up on, but it almost deserves a show in itself. But the destruction is getting really, really serious now. Sean Hannity used the term kill shot in May. He said, our enemies are trying to take us out with a kill shot. And I concluded one of my articles the other day at American Thinker and the Hagman Report saying, was Sean right and predictive in a way he might never have known in May, that literally they are using kill shots now to take some of us out? But again, we have to be aware of these things, as discouraging and depressing as they may seem, because ultimately they point to the truth. And as I said, and as we can continue to say, the truth shall set us free. So that's a good starting point or midpoint, and then we can hopefully see our way to an endpoint, to a light at the end of the tunnel, as we clutch our Bibles and our guns here and go forward into the second American Revolution, which I think is just really getting underway.
Peter Barry Chowka, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a fast hour. It's went by so fast. And folks, read Peter's articles. Check Hagman Report. Bookmark the site. Check it regularly. And Peter has a section on the right-hand side where you can read all of his latest articles right from Hagman Report.
And thank you so much for that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank Eric. He's the one that set that up. And Peter, we look forward to having you on in the future. And we will get together one of these days and have a little campfire setting kind of discussion.
Look forward to it.
God bless you, Peter. God bless you, Peter Chowka.
Take care.
All right. We'll be back after these messages with Charles Van Wyk. Don't go anywhere.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.